At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's higher than Robinhood, SoFi, Wealthfront, Capital One, and the big banks, too. Ready to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash? Check out the high-yield cash account on Public.com. This is paid for by Public Investing. 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
It is Friday, so we've got the weekly wrap, we'll talk minimum wage, and then a saucy story. That's all I'll say about that. From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Rima Reis, in for Kaya Rizdal. It is Friday, December 24th, Christmas Eve. Good to have you along. All right, so we've got a lot of new economic data this week. So I'm just going to jump right into it with Gina Smilak with the New York Times and Jordan Holman with Bloomberg. Hey, you two.
Hey, Rima.
So, Gina, I'm going to start with you. We've got new inflation numbers this week. And again, we're seeing sort of the same kind of headlines, record rates. This time, the rate running at its hottest pace since 1982. I've been reading some of your work this week. I know you've been talking to Fed officials. What's going on with them? What have they been saying?
Right. So the Fed basically knew this number was coming just because you could tell based on previous inflation data. And so when I was talking with them, you know, last week ahead of the holiday, I think what you're hearing pretty consistently is they're increasingly concerned about the sort of numbers we're seeing. They're very high. They've been very high for a long time. And what we're seeing is that inflation is starting to affect a broader range of categories. So previously, it was really just things like used cars, computer screens, things that were clearly directly affected by the pandemic that were showing big price increases. But these days, we're seeing it in, you know, most notably rents. And the risk there is that those things tend to be a little bit longer lasting. And so I think they're a little bit more worried about this inflation than they were about the inflation we saw earlier in the year.
I see. And so, Jordan, we have a story coming up from one of our reporters, Justin, about how consumers are responding to inflation. But based on your reporting, how are retailers doing? How are they responding to it?
So this inflation is coming right at the most important time, the holiday shopping season, which for context, like department stores can make up to a quarter of their annual sales during this time. It's a lot. And apparel is one of those categories that shoppers are really seeing inflation. So when it comes to the retailers, they have to be very careful when it comes to pricing. One thing that I'm sure so many listeners have heard and seen for themselves is that discounts weren't the best this holiday season. And that's one way that retailers have tried to hold the line when it comes to protecting their own margins.
Mm-hmm. And so we've reported on the show this week, you know, sort of what the Biden administration is trying to do to fix this inflation problem. Like, for example, increasing the supply of oil and gas, also trying to keep the ports open longer, among other things. But realistically, Gina, how much can the administration do?
It's pretty minor. Yeah. You know, they can't do the kinds of things that would really constrain this in a sort of macroeconomic across the economy way, that is the Fed's job. And so that is why we're seeing, you know, the Federal Reserve pay so much more attention to this, sort of prepare their policy to potentially react next year. So we've seen them really set themselves up to raise interest rates in 2022, which they're saying that they, you know, sort of expect is going to be necessary. Mm-hmm. And that should help to slow down demand a little bit. And by slowing down demand, it should help to sort of allow supply to catch up and help these inflationary pressures to fade.
So they want to raise interest rates. They've been saying that for a bit. What other effects could higher interest rates have on the economy?
So, I mean, there are obviously myriad effects, but the most notable one is it will slow down the housing market, mm-hmm. it will slow down car buying, it will slow down business expansions, and that will all end up sort of feeding through into hiring. So it will likely slow down the job market, which, as most people know, is pretty tight in many industries right now. And so what you could see is just fewer jobs available per unemployed worker, maybe slightly less, you know, solid wage growth than we've been seeing recently. And so I think, you know, just generally a slightly more slow going economy than what we've gotten used to this year.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Jordan, I want to go back to something you were saying earlier. This is a big time for retailers. And I'm just curious, like, could you put me in the mind of a big box CEO for a minute? Like the day or two after Christmas, when they sit down to look at the receipts, what are they looking for?
Great question. So one, they're looking, they're trying to compare themselves against 2019. That's the last mm-hmm. normal year that we've had. So they're looking at foot traffic. Did it meet 2019 levels? They're looking at sales, obviously. And so right now, based off of the most recent data from over the weekend with Super Saturday, it looks pretty good when we're comparing it to 2020. But when it comes to sales and foot traffic for 2019 is still double digits decline. So we're definitely not where we want to be if I was, you know, a big box CEO. Mm. But also the other thing, like Gina was talking about, there's a lot of things that are working against the U.S. consumer right now when mm-hmm. they're just thinking about their wallet and what they can spend on.
Yeah. And the thing that I'm thinking about right now, and I know a lot of people are thinking about, is as we're going through this COVID surge, you know, last time I checked, I think Omicron now accounts for 70% of new cases, which is wild. And so I'm curious, like, how do we think these new COVID numbers will impact the economy? Gina, I'll start with you.
Right. I think, you know, it is still early days. So yeah. The important caveat is all of this is very uncertain. But I think that you can assume that it's going to affect demand at least a little bit. You know, we're seeing in-person hockey games be canceled. We're seeing Broadway shows get canceled. We're seeing, you know, hotels canceling reservations, mm-hmm. airlines canceling flights. Every time something like that happens, you know, people are not working their scheduled hours. People are getting paid less, and that is going to feed through to demand. Consumers are less able to go out and spend their money on services. And so that means, you know, less spending in the overall economy. Or more spending on goods,
yeah.
Which leads us to the second part of what this means for the economy, which is that it could just keep everything very weird. Like things have been bizarre recently, and that's
even
part
weirder.
Of the reason why
yeah.
we're having, yeah, we're having really big inflation because the supply chain is so messed up, and this could just perpetuate that. And so I think that those are sort of the two big fallouts from Omicron that we are certainly watching very mm-hmm. closely as we cover the economy.
Yeah, and Jordan, what are you hearing from retailers on how this surge could impact their businesses and, you know, ultimately the economy?
That it just creates more uncertainty that they've seen over the past 2 years. But with each wave or new variant that we see, we don't exactly know what it's going to do to the consumer. The consumer could want to buy a lot more goods or just not spend anything at all. And that makes it very difficult for buyers in retail. Like, how many shirts do you want to get? Or mm-hmm. do I lean more into, you know, cozy clothes? That's just all of this uncertainty that makes it very difficult to plan a business. And that's what retailers have had to struggle with over the past 2 years now.
Great. So things are going to get even more weird and more uncertain. Gina Smilak,
exactly.
Yeah, Gina Smilak is with the New York Times and Jordan Holman is with Bloomberg. Thanks you two for joining me, especially on Christmas Eve.
Thanks for having us.
The markets were closed for the holiday, so we'll do a special edition of the numbers later in the show. Like I was just talking about with Jordan and Gina, we got the latest consumer spending numbers this week. Spending rose 0.6% in November, which was a slower pace than what we saw in October. But that said, there are some encouraging signs that people still want to spend. Marketplace's Justin Ho has more.
One likely reason that spending slowed down in November is that this year, people did more of their holiday shopping in October.
Then when November came, a lot of that spending had already taken place, and so the numbers look a lot softer for November.
That's George Perks, macro strategist at Bespoke Investment Group. He says people were probably worried about the congested supply chain and wanted to get things early. Overall, he says,
when you take the 2 months together, things look pretty normal and you know, healthy consumer spending growth.
There are other signs that consumer spending is still strong. Chad Moutre is chief economist with the National Association of Manufacturers. Its latest survey found that almost 90% of its members are feeling positive about the manufacturing outlook.
And a lot of that really is the consumer continues to go out and spend, and that's an encouraging sign for manufacturers.
It's still too early to tell how consumers are reacting to the Omicron variant, which the public learned about at the end of November. Moutre says there's still a lot of uncertainty as we move into the new year.
To the extent that we have additional restrictions put in place or that the consumer starts to pull back a little bit, I think those are the real worry signs, I guess, as you move into the first quarter from Omicron.
If consumers do pull back, they're likely to spend less on in-person services, says Lynn Franco, Senior Director of Economic Indicators at the Conference Board.
Restaurants, movie theaters, travel may well be impacted as we sort of get into more of the surge that's expected to take place over the coming weeks.
But Franco says people aren't likely to pull back on buying goods. This week, the Conference Board found that more people plan to buy cars, appliances, and other big purchases over the next 6 months. I'm Justin Ho for Marketplace.
So when it comes to this economy, there are a lot of question marks going into 2022. But focusing on the things we can expect, according to the National Employment Law Project, 50 states and cities are scheduled to bump their minimum wage rates, many of them to $15 an hour or more. The move comes as efforts to raise the federal minimum wage for the first time in more than a decade have all but fizzled. But as Marketplace's Megan McCarty-Carino reports, many employers this year have been bumping up their wages anyway.
A labor-backed campaign, the Fight for 15, has been advocating for higher pay for nearly a decade. And Americans across the political spectrum have increasingly supported these policies in recent years, when wages were pretty stagnant. But now, things look different, says economist Michael Strain at the American Enterprise Institute.
The really rapid wage gains that we've seen in 2021 will affect how much of a bite $15 an hour minimum wage has or a $12 an hour minimum wage has.
Average wages were up almost 5% in November, even higher in some industries like leisure and hospitality, which saw wages grow almost 14% compared to a year ago. So bumping up the minimum wage by a dollar or two?
Frankly, I think a lot of establishments have already started offering wages similar to that.
Brian Asquith is an economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. He says businesses typically decrease hours, hire fewer workers, or raise prices when minimum wages go up. But a tight labor market means employers might not feel the change any more than they already are. And fast rising inflation means workers might not feel the benefits either, says Molly Kinder at the Brookings Institution.
In order to have the same purchasing power is $15 a year ago, you need to make over $16 now.
About a third of states tie minimum wage increases to cost of living, but others don't take inflation into account. I'm Megan McCarty-Carino for Marketplace.
Coming up,
there are just so many people in there eating my food.
Kind of want to try some myself. But first, let's do the numbers. U.S. stock markets are closed today since tomorrow's Christmas, so we'll look at some different numbers. By now, you may have a small pile of greeting cards from friends and relatives. Maybe you've sent a few yourself. I literally spent 3 hours last night finishing my cards, which, yes, I know, are going to arrive late. The Greeting Card Association estimates Americans purchase about 6.5 billion greeting cards each year, with sales between $7 and $8 billion. Christmas, maybe no surprise, tops the list of the most popular time for seasonal greeting cards. After that, we've got Valentine's Day, Mother's Day, and Father's Day. If you're on the road this weekend to greet folks in person, the national average for a gallon of gas from AAA is $3.28. Last month, the average was $3.39, so down a little. You're listening to Marketplace.
Looking for the highest interest rate on your cash? At Public.com, you can earn 5.1% APY with a high-yield cash account. And while we can't say it's officially the highest interest rate out there, we can say this. It's a higher rate than Robinhood, a higher rate than SoFi, a higher rate than Marcus, a higher rate than Wealthfront, frankly, a higher rate than Capital One, a higher rate than Ally, a higher rate than Barclays, a way higher rate than Bank of America and Chase, a higher rate than Citi, Wells Fargo, Discover, and it's a higher rate than American Express, too. So if you want to start earning 5.1% APY on your cash, check out public.com. We can't say it's the highest interest rate, but it's pretty darn up there. This is paid for by Public Investing, 5.1% APY as of March 26, 2024, and is subject to change. A high-yield cash account is a secondary brokerage account with Public Investing, member FINRA/SIPC. Funds from this account are automatically deposited into partner banks where they earn a variable interest and are eligible for FDIC insurance. Neither Public Investing nor any of its affiliates is a bank. U.S. only. Learn more at public.com/disclosure/high-yield-account.
And now a word from our sponsors at Betterment. Do you want your money to dream big? Do you want your money to be a total self-starter? Are you annoyed that your money doesn't work hard enough? Don't worry. Betterment is here to help. Betterment is the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Their automated technology is built to help maximize returns. Meaning, when you invest with Betterment, your money can auto-adjust as you get closer to your goal. Rebalance if your portfolio gets too far out of line, and your dividends are automatically reinvested. That can increase the potential for compound returns. In other words, your money is breaking a sweat while you can be breaking bread. You'll never picture your money the same way again. Betterment, the automated investing and savings app that makes your money hustle. Visit Betterment.com to get started. Investing involves risk. Performance is not guaranteed.
This is Marketplace. I'm Rima Khreis. One of the big headlines of the week was, of course, Senator Joe Manchin saying, nope, he's not going to support President Biden's Build Back Better social spending bill. The bill, among many other things, included a $12,500 refundable tax credit for electric vehicle purchases. Over the last year, U.S. automakers have redoubled their efforts to make more electric vehicles. And that has led to a quickly growing demand for the raw materials used in batteries. Most of them need cobalt. And the bulk of the world's supply comes from the Democratic Republic of Congo, one of the world's poorest countries. The BBC's Dara McIntyre reports.
Almost two-thirds of the world's supply of cobalt comes from the Democratic Republic of the Congo. It's a metal that's key to the electric car revolution. Geologist Murray Hitzman is a cobalt expert.
It has very specific physical properties that make it uniquely suited for batteries in particular. Every car manufacturer is going to want this metal.
Up to 30% of cobalt in the DRC is dug by hand in artisanal mines, like the Chibara mine near Kolwezi. There are hundreds of men here hammering at the rock with chisels and shovels to get at the ore. Once processed, the metal gets into the supply chain and is impossible to trace. Experts say that none of the electric car makers can be sure they haven't used cobalt from artisanal mines. Kolwezi is where you will find the world's richest seam of cobalt. It's also where you find the electric car industry's fiercest critics, the Nuns of the Sisters of the Good Shepherd. They run schools, a community farm, and a community banking scheme. They are committed to bringing social justice to the people of Kolwezi. Sister Margaret Lee has been working here for almost 10 years.
Kolwezi, yes, it's the capital for cobalt, but the people are suffering. They are suffering, really suffering.
The biggest electric car maker is Tesla. Tesla has agreed to buy up to 6,000 tons of cobalt a year from Kolwezi. It's buying from Glencore, a mining company that runs big mechanized mines. But some Glencore plants have run into resistance locally. It's trying to clear the Chabara artisanal site and the miners who've worked there for more than 10 years because it wants to open a commercial mine. Jacques Kouamba heads the artisanal cooperative.
I have about 15,000 people here, but they will be left with no work. We have children, wives, families. We can't live like this.
This is a dispute about who profits from Kolwezi's cobalt. It's back-breaking work, but the miners at Chabara can at least earn a living. If Glencore takes over, the mine will be safer, but far fewer workers will be needed. Sister Jane Huainao from Good Shepherd says the artisanal miners need to be looked after.
You can't tell someone this is where he's getting the daily bread or the food for the family. You tell that person stop, but then you don't offer an alternative. It's like killing that person.
Glencore says it owns the site, and this is an illegal, organized operation. It says it will help relocate the miners if a suitable site can be found, and that its supply of cobalt is independently verified not to come from artisanal mines. Meanwhile, the Sisters of the Good Shepherd have decided to take their campaign for social justice straight to the standard bearer of the new technology, Tesla. They've bought shares in the world's most valuable car company so they can influence policy and hopefully win the support of its wealthy boss. In the Democratic Republic of the Congo, I'm the BBC's Dara McIntyre for Marketplace.
For many businesses, you could say these last few weeks have not been fun. You know, it's the annual mad dash of getting packages sent out and delivered before the big day. And this year, with all the supply chain headaches and, I don't know, being in the midst of yet another surge, it has not been an easy feat. So we got Kiki Araneta on the line. She's the owner of Poi Dog Sauces in Philadelphia. We actually talked to her back when her sauce business was just getting started, and we wanted to check in to see how she's handling the stress this holiday season. Hey, Kiki. It's good to have you back on. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm good. So when we last talked, you told me that you had to close down your restaurant because of the pandemic, but then you started a new business selling sauces. It's been a few months now. How's that been going?
It's been going really well. And obviously, I am learning every single day on the job, kind of like the way that I did when I'm starting the food truck and the restaurant. So it's spreading more and more.
Nice. And so how's it been these last several weeks with your holiday orders? Have you been dealing with supply chain issues or any other sort of challenges?
Yes. Yeah. Hopefully by next year, if we're talking again, I'm not doing the distribution myself. But yes, supply chain. Oh, my God. So there was definitely like delayed shipments. The pallet got lost somewhere outside of North Philly, and then the truck broke down. And it was just like every single day I was like, what happened?
So wait, do you have everything now? Are you ready for, I guess, you know, tomorrow's Christmas, but...
I mean, yes, but over the year, I've had a lot of trouble sourcing for the Maui Lavender Ponzu. Mm. So that's kind of on hold right now because the supply chain from Japan has still not really returned to pre-pandemic levels and availability.
And you said you're doing it all by yourself. Do you just like have packages and bottles everywhere and labels? Like, what does it look like?
So I actually use my now husband's restaurant as like the pickup and storage facility.
Gotcha.
I don't know if he's thrilled about it, but we've only been married like a couple weeks. So,
oh, wow.
So he hasn't had time to like really get upset about it yet.
So, your sauce business isn't the only thing on your plate. No pun intended. You've also been working as a recipe developer at a restaurant, which sounds like the coolest job. Can you tell me about that?
So the chef residency that I had at Volvere, Jose Garces's restaurant here in Philadelphia. So it was really, really busy and it's packed. There are just so many people in there eating my food. And that is something that I really missed because I haven't had a restaurant in over a year. The bartenders made cocktails with the sauces and they were just so delicious and so wild.
What was your favorite cocktail?
Oh my God. All right. One was mezcal mixed with chili pepper water and watermelon, and it was garnished with like a togarashi dusted dehydrated watermelon, and that was so good.
That sounds so elaborate. That's a lot more elaborate than I expected. So I know that this is still an early business. Have you made any profit yet?
No. I mean, it's self-sustaining, which is great, I think, for a business that's like not quite a year old. As soon as I make money from selling sauces, then it just goes into like the development of the next batch, figuring out how to expand beyond Philadelphia and reach more Hawaii people. So every penny from the sauce business has so far been going back into the sauce business.
Gotcha. Well, you said you got married recently. Congratulations.
Yes. Thank you.
What was that like? You know, going through wedding planning and doing all the festivities while managing your business?
I mean, on my wedding day, I was both freaking out because it was my wedding day and I didn't know where my pallet of chili pepper water was.
Wait, that it happened during your wedding day when you found out that it was missing?
But stressful. It's okay. Like, I had an absolutely gorgeous, utterly magical wedding. I know a lot of people say this about their weddings, but mine was really, really great.
Yeah, I just actually got married this year, too, and it is stressful.
Oh, my God. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah, but wedding planning feels like a job in of itself. So I'm glad that's behind you, too. And you can focus on the business.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, Kiki, I'm wishing you the best of luck going into the new year, and I appreciate you making time to chat with us again.
Thank you so much for having me.
This final note on the way out. We talked this week about how people are saving less, partly because pandemic relief payments have dried out. But for many low-income families, the situation feels especially dire. The Census Bureau estimates that more than 21 million Americans didn't have enough to eat in early December. The number of households in which there was sometimes or often not enough to eat reached 9.7% this month, which is a five-month high. Many of those families have come to rely on the expanded child tax credit payments. The fate of that expansion is in limbo right now with the Build Back Better bill in the Senate. The bill would extend those payments through 2022. All right, we gotta go, but not before your moment of economic context. As you may have already heard, if you're not actually experiencing it yourself, airlines across the world have canceled more than 3,500 flights for today and tomorrow. I feel like I don't even have to say why, but yes, it is because of Omicron. It's left a lot of airlines short-staffed. So many people right now are scrambling to rebook their flights. Yesterday, roughly 2.1 million people passed through TSA checkpoints. Last year, that number was about 850,000. Our theme music was composed by BJ Lederman. Marketplace's executive producer is Nancy Fregali. Nancy Gassett is the managing director of news. Neil Scarborough is the vice president and general manager. And I'm Rima Reis. We'll see you Monday. This is APM.
With access to so much information, it's hard to feel like an informed, discerning citizen. That's why on Make Me Smart, which is a podcast from Marketplace, we make it easy for you to stay in the know. Hi, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Every weekday, Kimberly Adams and I unpack the latest from Washington, D.C.
The Senate Minority Leader has announced that he will step down as the Republican leader.
What's happening in AI?
Don't buy at the top, but holy cow, artificial intelligence and all the companies related to it are the hot new thing. And we do the numbers.
So as a refresher, inflation is the rate of increase in the prices of things. It's not just sort of things getting more expensive. It's the speed at which things get more expensive.
Because in a world that's constantly changing, we all need to stay smart. Listen to Make Me Smart wherever you get your podcasts.